And on today's program, a very good morning to you. Concerns over gangland activities in the Tuam area. The RNLI indeed saved four fishermen over the weekend off Inishmore. We're looking at the future for South Park. We have a star from Galway indeed joining us in studio today. Also on today, we're looking at an incident at a boxing event in Castlereagh over the weekend that has caused some concern as well. The British Irish Chamber of Commerce are in town. Galway greats indeed today. Brian Sheridan, the Galway Harbour Master, is our Galway great. And the ambassador, the English ambassador to Ireland, Paul Johnson, joins us in studio. That and more between now and 12 midday. All the comment lines are open if you want to get through to us. A very good Monday morning to you. Now we are with you until 12 midday today, and you can text us or WhatsApp us to 086 38 33 55 3 if you want to get in contact with us today. We would like to hear from you on that number, 086 38 33 55 3. A huge thank you, by the way, to everybody involved in the programme on Renmore in Flannery's Hotel last Friday. A great programme, great reaction, I have to say, to it. Thanks for the cards and texts and otherwise that we received, and it's great to get them. But thank you to Siobhan Farrar and the team in Flannery's, and to all of the participants as well. Now, last week we touched on an issue in Tuam in County Galway, and we had Councillor Andrew Reddington joined us, and there were some videos doing the rounds of an event that took place and a car that was absolutely wrecked by young people. But those concerned over the gangland activity in Tuam are still concerned, because there's been many videos posted over the weekend. Now, the Gardaí are on top of this in Tuam, so they are, and they're observing, they're on top of it, and they're doing their best from there. But this type of gangland activity is absolutely not for Tuam and should not be for Tuam. I'm joined on the line by Councillor Donnie Killalay, and he joins me on the line today. Donnie, when did this start and how did this start, can I ask you?
Well, I think the suspicions are locally that it is fueled by drugs, to be honest, and a drug war that's going on within the town at the moment. I certainly know that, listening to Councillor Andrew Reddington on your show last week, he described an incident that happened almost in the middle of our town in broad daylight where a car was wrecked. That seems to have sprawled now into a housing estate, Cushnahown and Tuam. I do know that there was a lot of violence up there. There was attacks on people, and the residents there were very concerned, of which I received a number of phone calls over the weekend asking if there's anything we can do to escalate a response to, I suppose, the criminality that's going on within the town at the moment, and that I have done.
So you're saying to me then this is down to drugs and warring parties are involved on both sides?
Well, that's what I'm being told on the ground. And sure, look, we have to listen to what the people are saying and believe what they are. My understanding is that the Gardaí were on scene in that area of Cushnahown shortly after the incident had taken place. They are aware of the people that done it and that they are taking action on it. After meeting with some residents over the weekend there, I think there's they're looking to see if they can scale up what can be done in relation to, helping to try and make their estate a little bit quieter and life a bit easier. There was a number of suggestions for me to get in contact with the Minister for Justice, in particular to see if we can get the Criminal Assets Bureau, CAB, to have an investigate, because I suppose when you're living in a town and you know people that are not working and you see that they're driving high powered cars and that they have plenty of time in the middle of the day for having a row or a fight in the middle of a street in broad daylight in front of children returning home from school, that can't be good for society in general. And I think we just need to look at a different tactic of how we get on top of the illegal activity that's happening. And in saying that, I do have to commend very strongly the work that the guards have been doing, in particular under the Tara operation, because there has been a lot of raids around the county, and Tuam is no different. Than we've had a couple of successful raids and people arrested in relation to drug selling and the movements of drugs within and out of our communities.
But I mean, does it take the loss of a life indeed for these people to grow up and cop on from there? Because this type of antisocial behaviour is not acceptable. I mean, the videos that I've seen over the weekend and last week, I mean, the damage done to cars and people, and there's no fear in the people that are carrying out these attacks.
There's no fear, but I can't understand it. And it was a comment that was made by someone else. You know, we see these arguments here where there's slash hooks been brought and hatchets, and I think you saw that video yourself of a few young lads in a car that a lot of bits and pieces with them. And, you know, I can't understand how they're going to have these rows and there's no one killed. They either have very bad aim or they're not, there's no intent for harm out there, because it's unbelievable that such weapons and that nobody is seriously injured. And, the only thing here is that we don't get innocent people caught up in the crossfire.
Yeah.
Because when you have this brazen activity going on in broad daylight, there has to be a fear amongst those people. And talk about the people, my community living down in Cushnahan and in that particular area. I mean, it's very difficult for them who have bought and are paying mortgages on their houses to be stuck in an area where this activity is going on by people who don't buy and people who don't pay mortgages in their houses. And this is where the difficulty is, you know, that there is no fair play about having a bit of manners or a bit of respect for those that for those that are living in the immediate area or vicinity around them. You know, go out to the bog somewhere and do it. Don't be doing it in the middle of the town where kids are looking at what's going on. And I know the Gardaí are on top of this. I mean, I've spoken to them over the weekend, a few of the guards, and they know what's going on and they are working on it. And I'm quite sure that there will be that they'll go to court. What happens after that is a whole different story entirely, and whether the justice system is capable of putting people away for this kind of behaviour for a long time. I suppose that is not the problem of the guards, it's the problem of the government and whatever is going on, that there's no space in our prisons. But I think we just really need to take a serious look at what way we tackle this type of criminality and drive on with it, Keith, to be honest.
But I mean, 2 years ago we covered something similar that happened in that same estate, so we did, and you were part of that as well, a year ago. We were back in that estate again, and we had many concerned residents who have nothing got to do with this conflict at all, worried for their lives and sleeping in the back of the house for fear that the front window would come in. So it's going on at this stage nearly too long. So the Gardaí, you say, are on top of that. Then justice has to be done. We can't interfere in that. But that's the only way that this is going to be sorted.
Keith, can I just make a comment to that, if you don't mind? I think in relation to the conversation that we had a year, maybe a year and a half ago in relation to that, I'm not sure this is actually directly linked to it. My understanding at that time that there was a feud going on, that seems to have settled down thanks to the good work of, in particular, the mediation people that got place and the guards and members of the community out there. I think that has settled down very well. And I think there's a realization by the communities involved that this has spilled out. I think this is a little bit different, and I think the people listening to your show from the area would know that this is a little bit different by the type of people that are involved in this particular activity. And they are now going to be targeted by an Garda Síochána, you know, to be brought to task over this. But you're right. This estate doesn't have an awful lot of problems in it and trouble in it.
No.
It has some by the same people. Which is always a worry, I would say. And I'm quite confident this will be dealt with. I think when it gets to the court, I think we'll have to try and see, you know, what can we do to help the court services in order to put these people away for a long time? Because I think if a couple of strong messages are sent, I think that will tackle things. But I have to say, when a couple of the residents down there had said to me, you know, Donna, is it time to bring in the Criminal Assets Bureau? Do you know what? I'm agreeing with them. Maybe there should be a Criminal Assets Bureau in Tuam Garda Station or Renmore, or a unit that's based locally here that can monitor what's going on, see how people that are on social welfare can drive new cars and higher powered cars, and tackle them with all the might and strength that they have in relation to revenue and criminality. And because they have great powers, in fairness to Criminal Assets Bureau, I think they'd be very welcome in Tuam at the moment.
I stand corrected on it, but I was thinking of the residents in the area, those that have those houses and all of that. I mean, the feud is one aspect of it, but here they are embroiled in the middle of something just again.
Yeah, look, it's of no fault of their own. It's a small minority of people that are involved in it. You know, this is, you know, I think, I don't want to say too much because I don't want to get involved in case there's going to be there will be action by the Gardaí in it, but I don't want to say too much that will identify anyone involved. But look, there is constant problem in most estates in Tuam, and I think it's not just this one in relation to a few people that will cause trouble all the time. And I do believe that it will be tackled. I have confidence in the guards in Tuam in particular, that they are on top of what they're doing, in particular to if we just look at the level of drugs raids that have taken place in Tuam over the last 6 months, I think it has to be commended that the amount of work and local knowledge that's been given to Garda Síochána, that they can act on what they know is going going on. And I think that we, as for as long as we as members of the community and that the residents around there would kind of cooperate with Gardaí, give them the information they need. And you know what? Let them go and do their job and they will do it. They will do it. What happens when they get to court is of no consequence to the work, the good work that Gardaí are going to do. But I think they will. I think they'll come out the right side of this with a bit of help from the particular residents in the area when they're looking for some information. And it can all be done confidentially.
All right, Councillor Kinnelly, thank you for joining us today on the programme.
Thanks, Keith. Good morning.
Yeah, I want to go to the Aran Islands because Declan Branigan is the coxswain and there was a daring rescue of Inishmore over the weekend and a lot of the emergency services were involved in this. And today we celebrate 200 years of the RNLI as well. But first off, to that daring event off the coast indeed. And Declan joins me on the line. Declan, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith.
Thanks for joining us today. You got an early morning call.
Yes, it was a bit of an early start for us all.
So the call came in, and there was a situation indeed where a fishing boat had gone aground.
That's correct. Yeah, there was a fishing trawler with five persons on board had run aground just on the north of Inishmore, North Auckland there. And we got the call from the Coast Guard to launch. So, yeah, we made our way around to them.
And that was at 4:15 a.m. From there. It was quite challenging once you got there.
Yeah, because in the time from when we launched the Kilronan to when we got around, she had started taking on water and she was taking on a list. And the skipper had made the command to abandon ship, so everybody was into the life raft. So the whole thing had changed in that 15 minutes whilst we were underway. So we had to change the plan as we went along. But we were fortunate there was ground crew from the local fire brigade and the Irish Coast Guard as well. So we had eyes on the shore. So it was very, very good. Multimedia thing.
Again, Rescue 115 then came along as well to try and assist in this.
That's right, yes. We got informed by Valencia Coast Guard that they had tasked 115 and she was about 10-15 minutes away, at which stage the life raft, she fouled her drogue on some rocks about 20 minutes off the shore. So we were able to stop everything that we'd planned there. She was in no immediate danger. So we were waiting on the chopper lads to come and assess the situation, hopefully do a winch. And that's what happened.
Now, the fishermen in question, they had trained for this as well, under health and safety point of view. So what they put that into action fairly quickly. Did the captain stay on board for a period of time and then bail out?
He did, yeah, he did. He was, I'm guessing, I mean, I know personally, your last ditch thing is to get into a life raft. If you can stay with the main vessel, you will. So he would have deemed that, yeah, she'd passed the point of no return. So he would have called for that. But yes, they definitely trained for this all the time. And they were exceptionally calm and composed. There was no panic or anything else like that. The spirits are very, very good.
And is the boat still there then, Declan? Is that going to be a problem that's going to have to be dealt with then?
Yes, she is still where she was left. That is going to be assessed over the coming days, I guess, by other agencies, and then a plan will be made with that.
Yeah. And again, what time would you have got back to base at?
It was around 8 a.m. Once we've done the debrief and then, yeah, having a mug of tea, going through everything that went on.
And again, the crew in question then, they were taken to the University Hospital Galway?
They were, as a precautionary measure as well, just to, you know, get a good assessment, make sure everything was okay.
And it was a cold enough night on Saturday night, would hypothermia have been something that you were concerned about?
That would have been one of our concerns, but thankfully nobody had gone into the water, which would have, you know, would have expedited that whole process as well. So that was definitely in our minds. So they would have had abandonment suits on as well. So, you know, they were set up for it. But yeah, thankfully nobody went into the water.
It must have been a very difficult situation. I mean, to lift, is it five or six people that the helicopter brought into Galway then?
It was five people. Right. And taken up on the high wire, on the winch.
Wow,
I mean it's fantastic how them guys do what they do as well. But I mean, it's amazing to witness.
Even to keep the helicopter itself in the type of weather that was there, to keep it steady, to winch five people up, that was a task in itself.
It was, yeah. Now, fortunately enough, the wind had eased somewhat, but it wasn't a case of no wind whatsoever. But they are fantastic at what they do. And, I mean, we train with them regularly, and I see them training with Galway Bay as well. So they're never out of the loop.
I mentioned at the opening there that the RNLI is 200 years old today, so it is.
Yes, it is. It's a belly button day for the RNLI, which is quite an amazing thing for something that's a charity, and it's survived for this long based on volunteers and what other people give as well. So it's a testament to how they do it.
Well, you're to be commended. And were they an Irish crew, or were they from abroad, or do you know?
I'm not too sure, Keith. I know the skipper's from the island, so I knew him because we were speaking over the VHF. But yeah, as for the crew, I'm not so sure. But all I know is that everyone got off there safe and well.
Must be tough on them altogether. But thank God there was no loss of life. Declan, thank you for joining us today on the program. That's the coxswain indeed. Declan Brannigan joining us on that daring rescue. I'll finish more over the weekend, and our thanks to him for joining us today, and for Newell as well for putting that together. So spare a thought for them today. 200 years, a belly button moment, he said. I like that one. Celebrations are taking place right across Ireland and the UK on this today. So if you have a few spare bob in your pocket and you can make a donation to the RNLI, please do. Quick commercial break, we're back, and we're looking at the future of South Park next. Now, very good morning to you. Monday morning with you right through until 12 midday. And Councillor Mike Cuppert sits up to me over the weekend. He sent me a note to say that South Park and Renmore master plans will be going out to tender in the next couple of weeks, ahead of schedule indeed, which is good news. Councillor Cuppert, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us today on the programme.
Morning, Keith. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us today. Just in relation to the master plan, say we're looking at South Park and Renmore, but let's deal with South Park first off. What's the plan for there?
Yeah, so look, I suppose the master plans, and again, I've been quite vocal on these over the last number of years, and the plan was to try to get these delivered for the communities that they all involve. I suppose in recent weeks, we've seen the Kingston and Millers Lane master plan go out to tender and a consultant been appointed to that, which is a very positive step.
Yeah.
The next one then will be the South Park one. So we were looking, and we were kind of advised that later on in the year, we will see towards the summer that go to tender. But in fact, as you said, they're slightly ahead of time in terms of the current plans. That actually went out to tender last Wednesday. So what will happen now is the same process will take place, where they will go through a process of tendering through the framework, the consultants to apply for the project. It takes about 6 weeks. They'll then appoint a successful bidder for that, and then move on and actually go and start meeting with clubs and groups and schools and societies and so on in the area, and to map out a design plan then for South Park to move forward with that.
For the whole of South Park?
Yeah, it's a South Park master plan.
Okay.
So again, I suppose in the past you've seen, and again I've been critical in the past where I felt these master plans were going at snail's pace. I've been critical in the chamber and both with yourself here. And again, credit where it's due now. In the last number of weeks, the City Council recommendation staff have worked tirelessly on these projects to get them to this stage. And so again, I welcome that and compliment the staff in City Hall for that. But again, for the clubs, you like to see for West United, Father Griffin Air Oak, there's many other clubs and groups in the area. I had a call over the weekend from a basketball club asking, will the new master plan include a basketball court? And again, my advice was, once the consultants are appointed and the call goes out to engage in the consultation, get involved.
Yeah.
Let's get everyone involved in the conversation and see what's needed in the park, what's needed for the community as an entire community, and then go to design. And ultimately, then the next phase then is get this out to planning and move forward and finally deliver amenities and facilities in the area.
And this is subject to planning?
Absolutely, like everything, yeah. And again,
even though it's public community land,
even any other land, any land would be subject to planning. And again, I suppose in the past you would have looked at the previous in the last decade. We're looking at the South Park master plan. You're looking at an Astro facility, an all weather facility. For example, this weekend gone, where the City Council had to, and rightly so, close the soccer pitches because of the weather and damaged pitches. Clubs with no Astro facility, no all weather facilities, had to close. Couldn't provide training or matches for kids in the area. And again, in terms of league, then I know I spoke to some of the clubs the weekend. They lose home advantage, and that kind of stuff happens as well in terms of league football. But ultimately, I think it's 2024, we have to be able to provide facilities for kids. And we spoke at length of this before. So again, the previous plan would have included an Astro facility, a playground, a public walkway, cycleway, tree planting, and a good, look at South Park as it is.
It's a huge area.
It's a huge area, and there's a huge scope there.
It does need to be maximised, but I mean, there's also a legacy in the ground there. So can they leave that buried and just work around it?
Well, there are challenges, and obviously they've been the old city dump many, many moons ago. There's challenges in the ground. There's also challenges because it's a protected, it's an SAC. You're looking at all those various challenges there. But I suppose that's why we have the framework in place now, where there's experts in place that can get involved now in the consultation process.
Mm-hmm.
They'll speak to the clubs, the schools, the groups in the area. First off, see what's needed. I suppose looking from the outside, looking in, we can all say, well, yes, we need an astro pitch. Yes, we need a playground. Yes, we need a walkway. But when the consultants are appointed, what I would say is let them then do their job. Go and speak to the clubs and go and speak to the groups and the schools in the area and get an overall holistic view of what is required for the area. And then go and do a design and then come back, get that to planning stage. And then we go to a sports capital and whatever other parts of funding to get it delivered.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I suppose what I would say is, as you said, it is a big park, and we've got one chance to get it right in a holistic view of the park, to maximise the park for sports clubs, mm-hmm. for the community, for the residents, for schools and so on. So I'd say to everybody, once the consultant is appointed in about 6 or 8 weeks' time, get involved in the conversation if you have a group in the area that needs facilities.
But can we go back a little bit? Having the facilities is one thing, but then you need dressing rooms and showers and all of that. Is this going to necessitate a fairly significant capital spend then as well?
Absolutely, yeah. And again...
But again, if it's on an SAC, where can that be built?
Well, there's an existing dressing rooms there.
There is, yeah, but I mean, that's Cladder Hall.
Yeah, but at the back of there, there's also where West United would use as well, and the Gaelic Club would use there. And again, there's no reason why that can't be maximised and developed even further. And again, what I would say is, again, there's no point in me sitting and kind of second-guessing what's needed. Or what may be done or what may not be done.
But you know sport.
And I know, and again, I suppose the framework that's in place, so the consultants that are in place now for the Miller's Lane and Kingston, they will now go, they're probably 6 or 8 weeks ahead, will start engaging with clubs and groups in the area to see what is needed. Are dressing rooms needed? Of course they are. I know they are, you know they are.
Mm.
But let them go.
You can't have one without the other.
No, of course not. And that's what's been done in the past where, I've spoken at length as well, where you can't have facilities and pitches without toilets and basic amenities. So again, I'd imagine when the consultants come back after meeting with the clubs in the area, they will say, yes, we need to enhance those dressing rooms, we need to expand on those, where they already are on site there.
Have the clubs bought into this then?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So
the clubs they would be interested in sharing those facilities with others?
Yeah, look, again, and you look at West United, for example, one of Galway's oldest clubs. And again, they've an academy there that's grown by the minute.
Mm.
And they can't keep up with the facilities they have. They're struggling pitches-wise. So again, they would need to know about a facility. But equally, the dressing rooms that they have need to be expanded. And that will all, even I met them on site a few weeks back about a storage facility, a simple facility to store goals. And that will all now marry into the whole consultation with the consultants when they're appointed to see what is required for that club, for the GA club. There's an American football club back there. There's many, many schools, you know, in the area playing soccer, rugby and so on. And again, it's to maximise not just the playing facilities, but also the other facilities to support that in terms of dressing rooms, showers, toilets and so on.
And yet, it's also used by a lot of the public as well. I mean, it's a major walkway in the city, within the city.
Absolutely. And that was part of the original plan, and that would obviously now have to be upgraded and modernised. But the original plan would have also included an enhanced walkway and cycleway, new playground. To make sure not just the sporting public, but the general public can actually maximise that park, make it, it is a lovely walkway, as you know, overlooking Galway Bay.
Mm.
So to enhance that and maximise that, so not just, as I said, people involved in sport, but everybody in the community, the residents in the area, the general community, can maximise that park and enjoy that park going forward. So again, we've got one chance to get it right. And again, it won't happen overnight. But the fact now that the consultants, the tender has gone out last Wednesday, so it's ahead of schedule, as you said, in terms of the current process, went out last Wednesday. So it's about a 6-week period that the few companies that are there can tender for this job. Once that closes then, you'll have maybe a 2-week kind of cooling off period, and then someone gets appointed and we move on with the consultation. And that's going to be a key point.
But this is still only getting into pre-planning and into planning.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. But again, it's a big step though.
But then what are you talking about then? So if it gets through planning fairly handy, there will be appeals, we know that, because of the nature of the beast and where it is. So there will be appeals. So you're looking at perhaps minimum 2 years down the road on this one with appeals.
Possibly, yeah. Possibly, yeah.
And then you're looking about going into construction. So you're looking about 27 starting construction.
Again, I don't want to preempt what the designers will come back with. But let's be
realistic.
Yeah, I know you're talking probably that, yeah.
Yeah, 27. And then it could be a 2-year build. So you're talking about 29 really when it's finished.
Possibly, yeah. I suppose, again, providing everything goes, as you say, to plan. But I suppose in the past you would have had the conversation around Sow Park has always been sort of, what if when we open the ground up something goes wrong?
Yeah.
It's an SSE, it's a protected area, what if something goes wrong? And I've always said, well, let's go and see first. Let's put the experts in place. Like, I'm not an expert in terms of the planning or design, but there's expert companies out there. And the fact that we've now got over that hurdle and we've gone to tender for the first time to get somebody that's an expert in place.
So take that as a positive.
It's an absolutely positive.
Yeah.
They will now go and start.
So take the next positive, which is
take step by step.
Plan.
Yeah, take step by step.
Like consultation plan.
We could sit back and say it's a protected SSE and let's not do anything there. That that doesn't help the kids of the area and the community in general. So let's take every step as a positive. This is a positive step that for the first time we've got a tender gone out now to get professional consultants in place to speak to the community to see what they need.
Okay. Now, will the same be done for Renmore? We were in Renmore last. We were broadcasting about Renmore on Friday last. Is that master plan going to be as intensive?
That went to tender on Friday.
Okay.
So that's also gone to the same process now. So again, that's the area, say, across from the community centre in Kingfisher, that green space.
And the church and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's a green space master plan for that area. And again, my colleague, Councillor O'Flaherty, has worked tirelessly on this one as well, where you're looking at the entire green space in terms of playgrounds, in terms of a bowls area, in terms of maximising that green space again for the entire community, in terms of walkways, cycleways and so on. So that has gone to tender as well. So as of Friday. So again, you're looking at a 6-week period again, roughly, until those tenders come back in, and then the next process takes place where the consultation with the community takes place in Renmore. So what you have, Keith, in essence, you have the Kingston and Miller's Lane Master Plan, you have the South Park Master Plan, and Renmore Master Plan have all moved on a massive step in the last couple of weeks. And again, that's credit to the team in City Hall, in fairness. And potentially you have three master plans that will deliver massive green space in a positive way for our three communities.
Good morning, Keith. Please ask Mike, what areas in Renmore are involved in the master plan? Hope they're not considering a skateboarding area. Have a good day.
Again, my understanding is it's the green space across, as I said, from the community hall and the Kingfisher.
The pitches are now. Yeah,
that whole entire green space plan. And again, I suppose, in terms of a skateboard park, I don't want to preempt what the consultants will find when they do their consultation. So they will go out, when they're appointed, they will go out to the public in an open call to say who wants to meet us and talk about different
aspects. Somebody else said, great to hear people talking, but there's very few kids in these areas anymore, both in Renmore and the Cladda.
Well, certainly in an area I know quite well in the Cladda, I disagree. If anyone goes back to the West United Academy, it's absolutely booming with kids back there. They may not live in the Cladda itself, but many would. But the West Academy is certainly growing at a rapid pace, and they need our support as a council, and I have no problem saying I'll back this master plan until we deliver.
All right. Listen, thank you for joining us today at the programme. Again, it's going to be a fairly big issue, I would think, when it comes to the local elections. Somebody said, fair play to Mike, it sounds like a great facility for the swamp, and just let's hope that we get it from there. And others saying congratulations and well done on this. Councillor Mike Cobbett, thank you indeed for joining us today on the programme. In relation to Tuam, this caller said, Keith, there's no consequence for these crimes seen in Tuam and around the county. Even for murder, people are out in 7 to 10 years. The change needs to happen from the top, with the Minister for Justice reforming sentencing times and crimes and prison conditions. A lot of these antisocial criminals have many previous convictions and know they can reoffend at no consequences. Our judicial system is broken and supports the criminal, not the victim, this caller said from there. Someone at last, this caller said, talking sense. Social welfare recipients driving around in new cars, living the life way above their means, bring in cab and sickens the ordinary working people on the ground. And another caller said, Keith, completely agree with your speaker. Cab is the solution. We've got a wonderful young lady joining us next. Stay tuned. Well, I'm delighted to be joined again by Irish actress and Galway native, indeed, Ciarán Flaherty. And she joined the cast of the Apple TV and comedy series, The Completely Made-Up Adventures of Dick Turpin. And it started streaming, so it did last week, but Ciarán sits up to me today. Good morning to you. How are you today?
Morning, Keith. I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Listen, from a young age, you've been very successful, so you have. How did you get the call for this series?
It was just my agent in London. They'd seen Paddy, the short film that I'd done. They'd seen a couple of other bits I'd done and they thought it was really good. They asked me to audition for the role, so I spent the whole summer of 2021 doing auditions and callbacks and interviews for it.
And then
in September, after school, I was really tired. My agent rang me and she was kind of going on a bit, and I knew there was something off about her. I knew that she was going to tell me something. And I thought it was just going to be asking me to do another interview. And then they want to give you the job. So I was like, okay.
So she was kind of meandering. So she was long-winded, a bit like me now on a Monday morning. But she got to the point, did she?
She did. She was kind of going on about schoolhouse, school and that. But she's kind of, I knew the way she was. She wasn't herself. I knew there was something else happening.
Yeah. But you didn't think it was going to be that positive,
no,
I'm sure.
No. I thought it was going to be like another interview or another callback or something. But
or coming into Galway BFM or something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Come here to me, though. What was it like, though? Because you were there from January to June, really. Were you in and out all the time?
I was. So we finished the pilot in 2021. So we done that in October. And then with COVID, there was a year's delay. And then in January 2023, we started filming again and doing our rehearsals. We started filming. And then we filmed right into the end of June.
Of last year?
Yes.
And what about school?
Well, I have a licence in London, so I have to legally do 5 hours of tutoring every day. So I'll be on set, and then when they're doing a camera turnaround or if they're doing some kind of other setup, then I'll go back to my dressing room or trailer and I'll do my tutoring.
Wow, and have you a tutor over there then, yeah?
I do. So we normally do it online because it's just easier.
Yeah.
And she's lovely. Her name's Ella, and she's like so much fun.
So then education continues then from there?
It does. So she does the main subjects with me, and then I always do like an hour of Irish Mam in the evening.
Mm. And talk to me then. You saw the finished product, and then they started streaming last week. Are you happy with the finished product?
It's incredible. It's just, everything is just amazing, down to the writing. And there's some little special effects here and there, and they're just, everything is so precise and perfect.
Wow. And what's the reaction amongst your friends and school friends and all of that?
Yeah, it's amazing. I went in on Friday morning and all my friends were there, and they're all clapping and cheering and saying it was amazing. And, you know, they're all so supportive of me, and I'm really lucky to have them.
Where do you go to school?
I go to school in Salerno.
Salerno, so yeah. There's a good team in Salerno to keep an eye on you now, so there is.
There is, yeah.
Yeah. And again, you maybe can't tell me, but I mean, so this is in the can, this is finished. And is there other work coming your way as well?
Yeah, so I've done a podcast for RTÉ Junior, and that came out a couple of weeks ago, so there's a couple of promotion things for that coming up. And then there's rumours that it might be turned into a film, so that'd be really cool.
Wow, from the pilot that you did with Art and RTÉ Junior.
Yeah, so it was a podcast. It's called The Adventures of a Young Pyre Queen. And I was the guest star for season 3.
Good on you. Well done.
Thank you.
Are you enjoying all of this? Or is this very hard work, can I ask you? Can I ask a lady, what age is she at this hour of the day?
You can. I'm 13.
13?
Yeah.
13?
Yeah.
Good on you.
I'll be 14 in October.
Wow.
Yeah.
14 will be a big day, so it will, yeah. But is it very hard work? Because you have to remember lines, you have to study, you have to do everything.
I don't find it that hard because it's just so much fun and you just enjoy it so much that nothing ever seems hard.
Mm.
And I love learning the lines. To be honest, I don't know how I do it. And then I end up learning everyone else's lines for the scene.
As well.
Yeah, and then it's great because sometimes it's like, they wouldn't ask the script supervisor washing my lines. They come over to me and say, Kiri, what's my lines again? And I just tell them.
So. Wow. So you have that photographic memory then that you can just...
Something like that.
Take it in and hang on to it from there.
Something like that.
So after you finish in Salerno then, what would you love to do? You have a bit to go now with Salerno. Quite a bit to go with Salerno just yet. But what would you like to do then? Would you like to go into films full time?
Yeah, so I'd love to continue acting, obviously. It's the best job in the world. But I also love maths. So it would be really cool to teach maths in London, in like Oxford or Cambridge, something like that. That would be awesome.
You like maths?
Love maths.
Where does your love of maths come from, tell me?
I don't know. I'm part of the CTYI programme, and I've any maths courses, I always do them. And there was a really cool course I done. It was like maths magic, and there's all these little tricks of how to do sums, and then we were doing like college maths, like binary codes and stuff. It was just so cool.
You're just so flipping intelligent, God bless you. That's what's wrong. To do maths, you have to be very intelligent.
Well, I don't know about that, but
I'm telling you, I'm the elder in this room. I'm telling you now, I'm a lot older than you, I'm nearly 50 years older than you. But I'm telling you, you're bright. You really are bright.
Thank you.
When does the rest of the, so the completely made up adventures of Dick Turpin, when does the next set of series, when does it go on streaming?
Yeah, so the first two episodes came out last Friday, and then there'll be an episode every Friday until the end of March.
Oh, so it's a good long run then, you have a good...
Yeah.
So there's seven in the series?
There's six in the series.
Six in the series.
Yeah.
See, I'm not good at maths. Now you have it. I can't count. Yeah, so six in the series then from there.
Yeah.
And did you sit down at home and watch it?
We did. It came out on Friday at 6 o'clock in the morning because it was coming out like midnight LA time. And us being the professionals that we are, got up at 6 o'clock, went downstairs and watched it. And it was so cool. And it was just, it was amazing to see, because it's kind of like, you know, it's been so hush-hush for the last few years. And, you know,
don't
it's kind
anyone.
Of...
anyone.
Yeah, and it was, you had all these NDAs and stuff. And I won't bore you, but there was a really funny story. So I work with Mark Wooten, and he played Mr. Poppy in The Nativity.
Mm-hmm.
And about a week or two after I came back from filming the pilot, obviously I couldn't say anything about anyone or anything in the show. And our lovely teacher, she put on The Nativity. And all my friends were like, oh my God, I love Mr. Poppy. Oh my God, look at Mr. Poppy. And I'm there saying, I can't say I'm working with him. I can't say he's my best friend. So I kind of spent most of that film in the toilet. Mm. A lot of bathroom breaks.
A bad tummy break that day, yeah. Tummy break that day.
Too much water.
But you knew that they were swooning over him, but you had worked with him.
Yeah, and I freaked out when I met him as well. And he Bonneville, most people know him from Downton Abbey, but I knew him as Mr. Brown from Paddington. Mm. And, you know, I freaked out when I met them, and I remember with Hugh, I was like, oh my God, hi Mr. Brown. I was freaking out. And like, he shook my hand, and I was like, I never wash my hands again. And now him and Mark, we always just laugh about it, and they always just laugh and say, you know, I just remember when you were so small and you were just so frightened of us, and now we're just best friends.
That lovely. So Mom has the shop in Lower Salt Hill, the florist shop.
She does.
With Dad in Lower Salt Hill. So Mom really couldn't travel a lot with you, could she?
She couldn't, no, poor Mom. Shout out to poor Mom, I love you, and thank you for all your support.
But they have been very supportive since you were born.
They've always been, like, I'm so lucky to have them. They're just so supportive of me. And I know if I decided in the morning that I was going to be the next Leonardo da Vinci, they'd be completely behind me and support me. Now, I never would be, because I can't even draw a straight line with the ruler.
No, but you have maths.
Yeah.
And he was very good at, Leonardo da Vinci was very good at maths, I was.
Still can't draw a straight line, though.
That's okay, neither can I, so that's fine. But you could be the next Leonardo DiCaprio. Take off, female. You could be what you want in life.
Yeah, I really love acting, and I know it's just something that I'm just so passionate about and that I want to keep doing for as long as I can.
And is it always going to be on TV, or would you consider the stage as well?
I've done a couple of stage things before, and I like stage, but you just never get the same adrenaline from stage that you walk from filming. Like, you know, another thing that I love about filming compared to like TV compared to stage is that when you're filming, you're doing something new every day. Mm-hmm. Rather than doing the same thing, I just think you get more excitement out of that.
So the stage is more humdrum, and you're doing that for 5 nights in the town hall or wherever you are.
Yeah.
I just think with filming, there's something new every day.
Absolutely. And it's just always you're doing a new scene, and I think there's always just so much more fun, and you get to, you know, and I think as well, you get to spend a lot more time hanging out when you're on a movie set. Because, you know, there's so many, like, camera turnarounds, and, you know, you just make so many amazing memories and that.
You've all the lingo that I'd only be thinking about, like, camera turnarounds and all that, but that's the industry that you're embedded in now.
Yeah, I love, even from very young age, even when I was six and I started, I was always just fascinated by how movies were made, and how TV series were made, and I was always just fascinated by the cameras and the lighting. And but now you see, when I watch a film, everything's just kind of spoiled because I don't find it that exciting. So I'm just like, well, it's not really that exciting because there's probably just a camera guy over there in the corner.
Don't take it away from us. It's all hard work, so it is. Listen, well done to you. Give my regards to Mom. Dad brought you today here. So is Dad the one that goes back and forth with you then?
He is, poor Dad, yeah. I feel sorry for him. putting up with me for 6 months.
You're his daughter, so he loves you madly, and that's what dads do for daughters.
Yeah, his bank account doesn't love me madly. Because even though I have my own money, I prefer to use his credit card.
That's the way to do it.
And he usually gets dragged out shopping. It was fun because it was a week of rehearsals, and where we were rehearsing, they put us in a hotel beside a shopping centre, one of the biggest shopping centres, Westfield Mall. And Dad really loved that.
But sure, he has it. He has his communion money, so he has. You might as well spend it for
absolutely.
Him.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and he has his brother's communion money as well. But that's the only thing. Isn't Kerry lovely to have you? Keep in contact. And again, the series is called The Completely Made Up Adventures of Dick Turpin. Kerry Flaherty, a wonderful young lady, I have to say. And well done to all your friends in Salerno, and well done to the extended Flaherty family and your mom's family as well. So you'll have to do some summer work in the floristry now in the shop. Do you know that?
Oh, don't worry, I'm already doing it. You know that there's a fine line between your acting life and your home life.
Yeah.
And the way you know that is the second you come in the door, you're giving a hug. Yeah, lovely to see you. You get a sweeping brush thrown at you, and you're cutting flowers, and you're sweeping the floor, and Dad's got deliveries out in the car. So yeah.
That's called work.
It's called fine line. There's no false illusions anywhere.
Listen, lovely to talk to you. Give my regards to all, and especially to Granny as well.
Yeah.
Thank you indeed for joining us, Kerry. Keep up the good work.
Thank you very much.
Now let's head towards the 10 o'clock news, and what a lovely, lovely person you are. And thank you indeed for joining us today. Let's head towards the 10 o'clock news. We have a full hour coming the way. Stay tuned and stay with us.